combat in Afghanistan may be winding down for American troops, but requests for supplemental war money keep on rolling. The Pentagon is asking for $58.6 billion for 2015. Officials say they've got plenty of contingency needs all around the globe. For more on what's in that request, we turn to Cameron Luthy. He's senior budget analyst for Bloomberg Government. Hi, Cameron.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Fine, thanks. So of that $58.6 billion that the Pentagon wants for fiscal 2015, how much would actually go to troops in Afghanistan?
So breaking it out by you know, the cost per soldier or that kind of analysis is a little tricky. But if you think about it, right, the size of the supplemental last year was about $85 billion. They're dropping the troop level dramatically from around 37 down to 11, counting some folks nearby Afghanistan, right? So there's a dramatic decrease in the troop level, but not as dramatic a decrease in funding for those operations.
All right. So then what if the operations are down and the spending is up, what does the money go for?
Well, that's the tricky part. So even as you reduce the number of troops, you have to bring equipment back. You have to shut down operating bases in Afghanistan. You have to there's a new request that we haven't seen broken out separately. It's small money, but explosive ordnance disposal. We want to be apparently the Department of Defense doesn't want to leave behind a lot of things that can hurt people in the field.
Good thing.
Yeah, you have transportation costs, and this is the part that I think contractors care a lot about. You have reset costs. Now, reset's a broad category, but it basically entails repairing and or replacing equipment that's been road hardened, put up wet, as they say.
So let me ask a slightly different question. This money in the overseas contingency operations budget, do we know what percentage of it actually is going to do something in Afghanistan as opposed to elsewhere?
Yeah, according to the Department of Defense, about 53.4% is for Afghanistan and related missions. I'm sorry, I should say 53 of the 58 billion. But, you know, it really isn't broken out between what's going to be performed in country versus back here in the States with you know, maintenance being one of those things.
I guess the real question becomes then if the base budget is lower than – it's below $500 billion, is it possible that the Defense Department is putting things that probably should be in the base budget in the OCO funds just so they happen?
Tom, how dare you? Yes, and both the Congress and the White House have historically put some things in the OCO budget or the war budget that may more properly belong in the base. I don't think there's a lot of that in this package, and the reason is as the size of the – so we said it was about $85 billion last year. Now we're down to about $59. The smaller the package, the harder it is to hide stuff.
But if about half of it, a little bit more than half, is going to things related to the conflict in Afghanistan, then what's the rest of the money for?
So there are, as I said, there's $53.4 billion is for Afghanistan-related missions. So I misspoke when I said 53%, and I'm sorry about that. There's small money for some things related to Iraq, but less than last year. There's this new counterterrorism partnership fund, which is for State Department accounts. That's a $4 billion brand new request that's designed to help other countries build up their capability to combat terrorism. And then there's about $900 million for what they're calling the European Reassurance Initiative, where it's about pre-positioning supplies and ammunition, vehicles, et cetera, in Europe, and increased mill-to-mill partnership activities, including training with countries in particular in Eastern Europe. And this is, of course, a response to the events in Ukraine.
We're speaking with Cameron Luthy, senior budget analyst at Bloomberg Government. I guess that's maybe where it gets into a gray area, not because someone is, you know, malintentioned here, but when you are positioning missiles, and there's a sort of permanence to that because it's based on a policy shift. And so it seems like the administration then is as much as the, let's say the White House, I should say, as much as the Pentagon is using that overseas contingency fund to change mission priorities and policies, but they're using the contingency fund to do it.
Yeah, and in some ways there's a convenience. So we all know the Pentagon couldn't put together their request for OCO because they didn't know how big the troop levels were going to be in Afghanistan. Now we have an agreement; it's going to be just under 10,000 troops in Afghanistan, you know, a couple thousand next door, probably, or nearby. That's a big decrease, but they didn't know that was what was going to come, so they delayed making this request to Congress. In the meantime, the world's changed. There's been a flare-up in Iraq, obviously, and the big changes in Eastern Europe. So because it was delayed for legitimate reasons, we didn't know what the troop levels would be in Afghanistan, this created a window of opportunity for the administration to say, oh, well, the world's changed. We need money for X, Y, and Z.
Well, and by my, you know, back of the napkin calculation, even if half the money is going to things related to Afghanistan, some money is going to this new counterterrorism fund and some money is going to bolster forces in Europe. There's still a lot of money that isn't going to any of those things.
Just to go back again, it's about 53.4 billion out of the total that's for Afghanistan. I misspoke earlier when I said 53%.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. All right, so that's almost all of it.
Yeah.
Okay. And in the contingency fund, this is more, I guess, of a question about the congressional procedure. Is it easier to move money around there than, say, in the regular appropriations?
There, Congress provides two sort of authorities. One is within the base budget, the authority to move money from one account to another. And you have to get Mother May I from Congress to do it, but it's about $4 billion. So you think about what Tom said earlier, the base budget is about $495 billion. So it's a pretty small percentage. And usually they make an additional amount of authority to move money from one pot to another that goes with the OCO. And it's, as a percentage, a greater percentage to give the administration more flexibility to adjust and adapt as things change on the ground.
So in general, it's safe to say Congress tends to kind of go along with these because they probably throw a few little things of their own in there.
Yeah, and one of the ways that we may see, and it's, I think, significant that in some ways we're not sure how the Senate's going to proceed, but they have not even marked up their defense appropriations bill, and their defense authorization bill has only gone through the committee stage. So they may get first bite of the apple to affect the outcome. One of the things that the Congress, both House and Senate, have paid close attention to in their review of the base budget is funds that they would call readiness, operation and maintenance funds related to training, to activities that like maintenance to make sure that, you know, it's not just to have trained people, but you have to have the equipment ready to go, too. And so it's highly likely that we'll see, in terms of congressional intervention, some adjustments on that score.
Cameron, I want to ask you about looking into the future, what these types of warfighting budgets are going to look like. Your organization, Bloomberg, had an interview with Pentagon Comptroller Robert Hale a few days ago, and he was basically saying, hey, you know, get used to this. Even after we pull out of Afghanistan, we are going to have these overseas contingency operations budgets. What does the future look like for this?
Well, in total, they'll be much smaller, and there's a lag in the size of these budgets coming down, as we talked about at the outset. The troops come down faster than the money. And the reason for that primarily is the repair and replacement of equipment. And what we've seen, Rob Levinson, one of our top defense analysts, and I did a study last year. We looked historically. We looked at what happened after the Gulf War in 1991. As long as the quote-unquote free money is available, they'll continue to ask for it and use it for repair and maintenance of equipment. But as the size of the pot comes down, that will come down as well. So, you know, there's a $5 billion logistics support market in the Middle East, and that definitely will be affected, as will the repair depots here in the States. As the time goes by, you'll see more and more of the cost shift to the base, and you'll see the department defer maintenance. What they did in 91, 92, 93, as the money ran out, and remember, other people paid for that war, the Kuwaitis, the Saudis, and the Japanese mostly. As the money ran out, they said, well, you know, we really don't need to maintain these vehicles, or we don't need to get them up to snuff. We can put it off for a while. And, of course, the reason that we could do that at that time was because the Soviet Union had collapsed. There wasn't anybody on the horizon to worry about. I think that phenomenon is likely to repeat itself. So you're going to see, obviously, the budget lagging behind the troop reductions, but it's not like the goose is going to keep giving forever.
It used to be, you know, what the joke about expense reports were, if you want to get a hat reimbursed, you would put on your expense report, hat used while traveling on company business to close such and such a sale, and try to get it through the accountants. In the same way, it seems like maintenance and operations, which they're short on with funds, the best way to get them through is, say, related to combat reconstruction or combat wear down, but that goes away over time as the combat goes away.
Yep. And it's a lagging indicator, but it doesn't mean it stays high forever.
All right. Cameron Luthy is the senior budget analyst for Bloomberg Government. It's always great to have you on.
Thanks a lot.